In Seattle, Washington, I'm Zach Jabal, and this is the Vine Pair Podcast. And today I've got three very special guests. They're the co-founders of 21 Seeds. So we've got Sarika Singh, and then Kat Hontas and Nicole Hontas Emmanuel, who are, the, as mentioned, the co-founders and the people behind 21 Seeds. And let's start with a question. So, well, let me start with an explanation, I suppose. So back in 2021, which just feels like ages ago, we had Kat on to talk about the brand with Adam and had a great conversation. I will link it in the show notes. I encourage you all to go in and listen to that if you want some of the information that we won't quite cover here, just because there's lots more to talk about. But one of the things I do want to mention that is a little bit in that podcast too is the origin story. And of course, since we have all three co-founders here, maybe we can start by just talking about kind of how the three of you came together and how you founded a flavored tequila brand.
I'll jump in here, Zach. This is Kat, one of the two sisters of 21 Seeds. So the 21 Seeds, we'll just get that out of the way for those who don't know, is two sisters, myself and Nicole, and one girlfriend, Sarika. And then that's what the 21 is, actually. Super secret. Anyway, I know. You know, I was a wine drinker. I drank wine. I loved it. I loved the ritual of it. And one day it just kind of stopped agreeing with me. And so I was sort of on a hunt for what else I could drink instead of wine that, you know, maybe would react better with my body. And I stumbled upon, you know, Blanco tequila as the solution. Which felt a bit aggressive, to be honest. I'm not a big fan of actually regular tequila, just straight up Blanco tequila. I find it to be really harsh. And again, for like a Tuesday or Wednesday night, like, what am I going to do to this Blanco tequila to make it more drinkable? Because when I stopped drinking wine, felt better. Now wanted to switch over to tequila, didn't like the taste. So I started infusing that Blanco tequila. And that completely changed the whole nature of it. It smoothed it out tremendously. It smelled great. It was really easy to use. I could just mix, you know, this infused tequila with club soda, put it in a wine glass with a slice of orange. And if I was using one shot of that tequila with club soda, that ended up being 59 calories, which is half the calories of a glass of wine. It tasted great. And that's basically what I started doing. And did that for 9 years before I approached Nicole, my sister, and Sarika and said, hey, you guys want to start a tequila company? Because we'd been drinking this infused tequila. They'd been drinking this infused tequila. It had sort of gotten its own little fan base within just, you know, the people we knew who would be asking me for bottles of it. Whenever I'd go to make a batch of this infused tequila, they'd want a bottle of it because it was just really easy to drink. Really easy to use. You could make it as a spritz. Again, it's half the calories of a glass of wine. Or if you wanted to mix it into like an easy margarita, you could just do it.
So the working name before 21 Seeds was Cat's Tequila. And I couldn't even get into parties without bringing Cat's Tequila before we decided to make it into a company. So we knew there was a big fan base before we actually took the leap and started a tequila company.
Gotcha. Yeah. It's very interesting to me that, you know, 21 Seeds launched with the three flavor profiles that are still out there today. They're the three main flavor profiles. For anyone who's not familiar, Valencia Orange, Cucumber Jalapeno, and Grapefruit Hibiscus. Sarika, Nicole, which was your favorite from the get-go?
Well, that's a hard one. You know, I love spice, and I just thought that the Cucumber Jalapeno was such a nice combination of kind of that verdant pepper, green, and spicy note along with the cool cucumber, and it was so versatile as far as making my favorite cocktails. But I also just found the Valencia Orange to be incredibly usable in many different ways. So I would say it's a tie between those two for me personally.
Yeah, it's like choosing between your children. It's very hard to pick a favorite, but I would say that it really depended on my mood. I would say my day-to-day is the Valencia Orange. My favorite cocktail is Valencia Orange with club soda and a splash of pineapple. That's like my go-to. Everybody knows that about me. But I would say if I'm going out, I want our perfect spicy margarita. I mean, there's nothing better than our perfect spicy margarita.
And Kat, I'm curious for you, as you were kind of creating these, which of the recipes was kind of the one that came first, or were you really making all three kind of from the get-go?
Actually, the reality was my very first infusion was the cucumber jalapeno, which is crazy because it is absolutely our number one seller. It's, if you can find it on a shelf, grab it because it's usually out of stock. So that cucumber jalapeno, I love spice. The cucumber is really there. I use the cucumber to just even the jalapeno spices because I was using, you know, real jalapenos which are all over the board in terms of spice level. And so the cucumber is really just there to like even out the jalapeno spice levels based on all these different jalapenos that we're using. And now even when we make it, that's the case that we want to like get this sort of even spice. So it became our number one seller. It's our number one seller now. And, you know, again, I think spicy margaritas have become so popular recently. I think spicy is the new skinny, to be honest with you. I think people prefer spicy margaritas over skinny margaritas. And so, you know, it's crazy that it became the number one seller because it was my very first infusion. And I know that never happens, yeah. But in our case, that's absolutely what happened.
And then when you think about the kind of other two as well, and I want to note too, we'll spend a little more time a little later on in the pod kind of talking about applications, although obviously we've gotten some sense of that from all of you kind of in your own personal favorite ways to enjoy these. But in terms of kind of recipe development and figuring it out, I mean, I know that Kat, you talked a little bit to Adam about this on the previous podcast, but I'm really curious as someone who's done a lot of infusing and whatnot work as a bartender, you know, one of the, I think the hardest things about getting infusions right, there are probably a couple of things. One of them is what you mentioned, which is that when you're using produce, there's a degree of variability that is really hard to predict. And especially with a thing like a pepper where maybe some people are in there taste testing every jalapeno. I don't have that kind of constitution. I couldn't do that. But you know, there's a lot of that variability. And then I think even more so when you start to scale, when you start to make not bottle by bottle infusions, but you know, larger volumes. And then as 21 Seeds has done, move into infusing at the distillery as a part of the production process in a sense, you're dealing with scale and ratios that change very much. Like, was there anything in that growth and in the scaling up of the recipes that was really surprising to you or that kind of caught you off guard?
I actually think that, you know, speaking to your point about the consistency, we wanted to take what Kat was doing in the kitchen and take everything that was amazing about that, which was that it was always delicious. But to your point, add the consistency. And I think what was surprising is that when we scaled up our batches, we actually found we could do that better.
Oh,
and offer a super consistent product. And really that's like the advantage of 21 Seeds, both for the person who's having it at home and in the on-premise, because if you're infusing it yourself, you're obviously going to have that challenge with the spice levels, with when it's gone past its date code, you know, and all of that. And so we're really trying to take all the aspects of what was great about the kitchen and scale it up without compromise, but add the consistency with spice, with ABV and all of those things.
Yeah, makes sense. And I think that, you know, you mentioned on premise, and that's actually something I really wanted to ask about, because in that conversation with Adam from 2021, you know, it was really clear that in the sort of earlier stages of 21 Seeds, a lot of your focus was understandably on retail and was on the off premise. And it was finding, as you talked about, Kat, in the previous episode, you know, finding your consumer, finding her where she wanted to shop, where she was discovering brands. And I think that's obviously been a tremendously successful sort of approach for you all. But you also run into this sort of, I'm sure you have run into this situation where at some point you build enough brand equity, you're popular enough, there's enough demand where you're no longer trying to pitch 21 Seeds to perhaps bars and nightclubs and restaurants, but they want it. And as you mentioned, sometimes keeping it in stock is challenging. How has the on-premise demand evolved for 21 Seeds, and where do you see the most excitement around it in that setting?
So the good news is, right, like when we did that interview, we were in the middle of the pandemic. Now we're out of the pandemic and everyone was buying and drinking 21 Seeds at home and making these easy cocktails at home. And now they're out and they want to drink it. And the beauty of it is that, you know, really what 21 Seeds is for those on-premise accounts is like a workhorse. And coming out of COVID, they have fewer, you know, there's challenges around just staff and being able to like find, you know, people have pivoted and gone to other industries. So it's even more so, you know, timing is everything. And like, we also now have this great timing in the on-premise because it's such a versatile and easy infused tequila to use, right? It makes making that cocktail, it makes any tequila cocktail is going to taste better with 21 Seeds as a starting Blanco. And that's really how the on-premise is thinking of it, right? If you're using a Blanco in the on-premise, 9 times out of 10, you're making a cocktail. And so we just make making the most common tequila cocktails that much easier, right? And if you think about the most common cocktails, you think about a margarita. What goes in that? Valencia orange, right? Because you might use an orange liqueur. Now you don't need that. So we're also saving the on-premise on cost of that cocktail, which is another thing that they're all considering as they reopen and use old inventory and stuff. It's like we're sort of like a gift that keeps on giving, right? Because you're not only easy to use, and anybody can get behind the bar and make a margarita just super simple, right? 21 seeds, Valencia orange, simple syrup, lime juice, you're done. You don't need triple sec. You don't need Cointreau. That's also how the consumer wants to be drinking, right? Like the consumer sort of shifted and they're looking for, you know, better for you options. They want to drink a little lighter. And so we play really well in that space with zero sacrifice on taste. And then in terms of cost, right? When we first came to market, our price point was sort of an interesting price point. It was sort of a no man's land price point, but we wanted to offer a real value to both the consumer and the on-premise and really have it be a functional item in the back bar that they can use to make these easy cocktails with. And, you know, we're in that, super premium, that $30 price point. And that's a great price point. The consumer's trading down to that price point now. And in the on-premise, our pour cost ends up being, you know, a really great pour cost, especially when you consider you don't have to use the triple second Cointreau, which is an added cost. So yeah. It's like, it's a real workhorse for the on-premise. So we actually think that's where so much of our growth is coming from, is from the on-premise. There's so much opportunity there because it's such a versatile product, whether you're making a Paloma using the grapefruit hibiscus, a margarita, tequila sunrise. You know, we make amazing espresso martinis with the Valencia orange. And now as you're seeing like espresso martinis wanting to be made with tequila, it's really, there's nothing better, Zach, like try that. It's going to blow your mind. So good. And then of course the spicy, which I think is the new skinny, you know, we really have it all. We're the great price point for the on-premise. We're fewer ingredients, easier to use, easier to train bartenders, even bar backs on. So we really think that's where so much of our growth is going to come from.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to Sarika's point about consistency too, and thinking about how for a lot of bars that just whether they are having to have had to kind of reorient post pandemic or are struggling with staffing, as I said, you know, infusions can be time consuming and finicky. And if you are not a bar with a lot of really sort of well-established, trained, knowledgeable staff to do all of that work, having a product that delivers kind of, as you said, both a really consistent flavor, a really desirable flavor, and at a price point that makes sense for bars, I think that, yeah, there's a lot of potential value there. I'm really curious too, you know, we've talked a lot on our podcast over the last couple of years about the real appeal of flavor forward beverage, just kind of across category, right? Whether that's seltzer, whether that's in spirit, whether that's in cocktails and in beer and wine, et cetera. And I think that, you know, the three core flavors that you guys have are good examples of kind of in their own ways, you know, each of them kind of is an embodiment of both that general trend of, you know, kind of flavor forward and a particular kind of fruit forward flavor, but also some of the different strains in there. Are you seeing over the kind of last couple of years and the growth of the brand and as it's kind of entered into some of these additional markets that they have specific resonances with different kinds of drinkers, or do you find that a 21 Seeds lover is a lover of all three?
My favorite basically debate is people want to prove to you why one is better than the other. Like there's not, you know, like people will come up to me and say, no, the grapefruit hibiscus is the absolute favorite one. It should be everywhere. And, you know, or the Valencia orange or the cucumber jalapeno. And most people, you know, before we were acquired by Diageo, when we had our products on Reserve Bar, they bought all three. 67% of our purchases were all three with no discount to any of them, you know. So people really do tend to like all three infusions, and then they like to fight with you on which one you should love the best.
Yeah. And then Zach, I'll just add to that, you know, I think flavors are going nowhere, right? Like I think we're going even further into just there's so many interesting new flavors too, just that, you know, as we are becoming more globalized, right? Like from all over the world that are sort of coming into just our consciousness. The thing I love about 21 Seeds is that it's very light touch, right? And that's where I think where we really did it right, right? Like the infusion, because it's truly, it's a very difficult process, by the way. It's very hard to make our tequila. And really to do it right, I think oftentimes flavor is not done right. In many cases, it's not done right, you know, and it can be overly sweet and all of that. And in this instance, it's actually very, very light touch. And what I love and what I'm excited, the most excited about, the thing that gets me really going is you can take these three infusions and go even further. I love it when I hear bartenders like pitch me ideas where they'll say, hey, you know, I took your Valencia orange and then I grabbed just coffee beans, whole coffee beans, threw them into the Valencia orange and then infused the Valencia orange with the coffee bean. And now I made an old fashioned out of that, you know, and with chocolate bitters. So it's like, that's what's really exciting about it. It doesn't just end there with these three infusions. You can infuse these infusions because, again, it's so light touch. What the infusion really did is it just really smoothed it out and imparted just this hint of flavor. And it's just a great foundation to build upon. And so what I love that I'm now seeing is, you know, we really, I think, showed that you can premiumize flavor. And I've always been like, hey, we're infused, we're not flavored, we're infused. And as a distinction, because I think flavor kind of got a bad rap, you know, and rightfully so, again, because I think a lot of flavor's done wrong. In our case, we did flavor right. And what I love about that is you're now seeing, you know, I think there's a lot of credibility where we brought a lot of credibility to the category. And I think part of that is also bringing competition to the category, which, you know, is not fun. Yeah. But like that said, you know, at least we did it, you know, we did it right. And we showed that you can do premium flavor right. And that's what we're really proud of, is that's what we did with this brand. And I think that's why, you know, the minute someone tasted it, it was like, oh, wow, it really does deliver on everything that beautiful label shows is going to be in that bottle. And it does it in a way the consumer expected. It's going to be smooth with light touch flavor. And then that turned that customer into an ambassador immediately, like to Nicole's point, and people pitching us why this one's better than that one. Like, we don't, whatever makes you happy, just, you know, we love you're drinking it. But we love that we were able to sort of do that for the category. We feel like we were kind of the pioneers in that, especially in the tequila space.
Yeah, I'm curious, you know, to something Nicole mentioned a bit ago about the one of the biggest changes for 21 Seeds since we last had you on, which is, of course, that you've since been acquired by Diageo. And whereas when Kat, you were on with Adam before, it was still very much in the sort of funding stage and looking to grow and maybe perhaps looking to sell. How has life changed for the three of you, and how has work changed for the three of you now in this world as, you know, kind of still overseeing the brand, but as a part of Diageo, as opposed to kind of on your own, you know, kind of trying to bootstrap it?
Yeah. I'll jump in and then the girls can chime in too. But I would say that, like, I bet Sarika and Nicole's life's gotten a lot easier because they, you know, we don't get those calls like, hey, the tequila truck is stuck in customs, you know, like, it's not going to make it across the border. And now Target's pissed, you know, cause we're not going to deliver the bottles on time. But, you know, I think logistics wise, there's a lot that Diageo has come in and taken off our plate, which is great, which has allowed us, freed us up to just be in market, which is the part we love so much. Like, again, because so much of where the growth is, I think, for the brand is in the on-premise, again, because, like, it's in a lot of homes. You know, we have a great home penetration, and people drink 21 Seeds faster. So, you know, because it kind of drinks like wine, it's that smooth and it's kind of rosé. As we head into rosé season, it's like rosé all day the new way, you know. But in the on-premise, that requires, you know, going into accounts and talking with bartenders and education and all of that. And that's really where we're spending a lot of our time, is in doing that. And we're really excited to do that because, you know, we think that everybody deserves like a perfect spicy marg, you know, and that's our goal. So I would say that's probably how it's changed the most from my perspective.
Yes, to Kat's point, what keeps me up at night is very different now than before, where I would be worried about, you know, trucks and customs and all the stuff that Sarek and I would be trying to figure out. But, you know, to Kat's point, you know, flavored tequila category was here before we came into. And so now that we've kind of made the category as big as it is, you know, obviously there's going to be copycats and competition, and no one ever copies you better. They always copy you worse. And so what keeps me up at night is I want someone's first sip to be 21 Seeds, because I want them to understand the actual category that they're drinking. I don't want them to have a first sip in some other flavored tequila category where it isn't infused and it isn't the product that we're actually putting in front of them. So I want them to have their first spicy margarita experience with 21 Seeds, not with somebody else. And that's what actually keeps me up. And that's why I want to be in market as much as I can to get all the on-premise to put the spicy margarita, because we very much do care about the first sip that the consumer has, because, you know, if they love that first sip in the flavored tequila category, then they'll stay in that category.
Sarka, how about for you? How has your life changed other than not having to sweat customs, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely remember having some conversations with actually Cucumber Farms in Washington State near USAC.
Yeah.
And having to think about, like, oh, there was a storm and what's the harvest going to be like? So I will say that not having that stress, some days it's nice. At the same time, you know, I did like being involved with our suppliers and all of that. But being a brand ambassador is fantastic in that, like, we get to go into market and really talk to bartenders, talk to consumers, and, you know, see what's happening in the market.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, too, for the three of you, you know, that conversation with bartenders in particular, I think, you know, we've talked a little bit about maybe how the various 21 Seeds flavors kind of offer some, you know, labor savings and consistency and all of that. But I'm also wondering, kind of like, when it comes to talking to bartenders and or bar staff in general about kind of why your product and whether it's why your product versus other flavored tequilas, or why your product versus building a cocktail out of a non-infused Blanco or something like that, what are the biggest kind of selling points that you kind of like to get into, or how do you kind of have that conversation? Because, you know, again, not to reference overly the previous conversation that you had, Kat, with Adam, I think one of the really interesting things about that conversation is that, you know, you have a really good handle on how 21 Seeds could give the home drinker a really elevated experience that was very easy, and that it could be more complicated if they wanted it to be, but that the sort of very straightforward idea of 21 Seeds soda water or flavored soda water or whatever, garnish, whatever, ice, and you have yourself a drink that is delicious and fun and feels, you know, kind of sophisticated and complex and all those things. And it's not that that formula won't work in a bar, but that bars are, by their nature, looking to do something a little bit different. Generally, people go into bars looking for something different, often something that they're not able to do at home. So kind of how do you make that sort of, I guess, sales pitch to a bar or to a beverage director or whomever? Like, what are the points of emphasis?
So I obsess about cocktails, by the way. Like, I'm cocktail obsessed. And I think that the way we sort of approach it, right, is that we have this sort of shared goal, right? Like, you as a bartender and as a bar owner want to sell a lot of cocktails. And so do we, right? So, and we have to think about the consumer, who's buying those cocktails. And what we sort of, you know, if you think about who's actually ordering cocktails off the cocktail menu, right? And we actually have looked at this data. It's women. Women are ordering cocktails off the majority of people ordering cocktails off a cocktail menu are females. And so the thing about what women want, and then if it's a guy, right, it's like, oh, here, taste this. It's so delicious, right? And a guy sitting with her, and then he's like, oh, that's really good. And then maybe that's how he gets, you know, off the cocktail menu. So that said, what we come at them with is like, listen, I would say the most overused ingredient in a cocktail is lime, in terms of a tequila cocktail, right? In terms of how much goes into a cocktail. And that's because you're starting off with 40% ABV tequila that's harsh versus 35%, which is 21 Seeds, which is already smoother. On top of that, it's infused. So you just need to put less in it. And the beauty of that is you sort of, everybody remembers like how you start the night off and how you end the night, right? So getting ready to go out, you're going to have a good night. And then the next morning, you're sort of like, how did I feel? You know, and if you're burping up stuff from like too much acid reflux from too much lime juice and most of your drinks, right? Then that's not a good experience. And you don't want to do that again anytime soon. So that like kind of, that resonates with people. Like I tend to lead with that. Like you start off and how it ends. And like, if we can help make that experience so that in the morning, the next day, you know, you've used less lime juice and 21 Seeds cocktails because you don't have to put as much in, never more than half an ounce. I'm going to take this opportunity to say to all my bartender friends out there, please, please don't ever put more than a half ounce of lime in any 21 Seeds cocktail. Not necessary. We're already so much smoother than the rest. We can build a cocktail. We can make a cocktail that's going to taste even better than any Blanco. And we love to do that. We say pull any Blanco off the shelf. So you sort of see what the starting point is. Right? Taste our Valencia orange versus, you know, or any of our SKUs against any Blanco on the shelf. Because again, that's how we like to frame it, is like, think of us as a Blanco tequila with a profile that has a hint of flavor that's on its way to making the most common tequila cocktails. It's not unlike Hendrick's gin, right? Like Hendrick's gin is just, it's just a gin that has less juniper, right? So it's a flavor profile, but you still use it to make all the gin cocktails, right? So
yeah.
That's like where we start. We say we love, love, love doing a blind taste test of just like saying, okay, not blind, but just like try our Blanco, try any Blanco, the most expensive Blanco you got on that back bar, and see how much smoother your starting point is. And also see that the starting point isn't that much different, right? In the sense that like even our Valencia orange, it's not like you're drinking orange juice, right? Yeah. Like it's still tequila, but just smoother with a hint of flavor. So now as your building block to build that tequila cocktail, where do you go from here? Now you can put less in it. And then they start to understand that's what we're about. And I think that that's sort of been what we've had success with, is like getting them to understand that this is really just it's like, think of it as a Blanco with a profile that's a lot smoother as a starting point. And then you can just build any cocktail you want. And that gets them out of this like, oh, that pigeonholes us in being like sort of a plus one, the way that like you think about vodka. Like you can't take, you know, I don't know, like a raspberry flavored vodka and make a dirty martini with it. It's just not going to work, right? Like that's the difference. And like with our Valencia orange, there isn't a cocktail that is a tequila cocktail that you want to make that you can't make using our Valencia orange. Period.
Yeah. And I think that's actually a really kind of critical point here, and actually ties into something else I wanted to ask about, which is, you know, all of the infusions, all of the flavors sort of either or flow naturally out of the flavors that are in Blanco tequila on its own, and or, as you said, Kat, are sort of the directions that all of the more common tequila cocktails want to go anyhow. They want to go into citrus, they want to go into jalapeno, okay. They want to go into floral notes and things like that. And so, as you said, it's not a sort of a gimmick one kind of drink that you're going to make with it. Whether, you know, you said raspberry vodka, I've been thinking about like some of the abominations I had to work with 15 years ago, like right. The marshmallow vodkas and things like that, where you kind of only could go one way with those. And it was, well, not where I wanted to go, at least as a drinker. And I think, you know, even they had a brief blip and that was about it. But this does lead me to the question that I really want to ask, which is, you know, we've talked about the margarita a lot, and it's, I think as a tequila brand, it is, you know, if you can't talk about the margarita, if you can't pitch the margarita, and if you can't deliver in the margarita, you know, you really don't have much point in being out there. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about the Valencia orange, and of course the cucumber jalapeno as being kind of ways to get into the margarita and produce a margarita with different characteristics, but both delicious. I'm also curious, you know, do you see people doing that with the grapefruit hibiscus? Obviously, that's a little more in the, as you said, Paloma range, but I'm just curious because, you know, like I said, when you have a tequila on your bar or at home, you're going to try to make a margarita with it, right? I mean, how else does anyone use tequila?
Yeah, no, 100%. And by the way, so the grapefruit hibiscus makes an amazing margarita. Again, it's so light touch. you know, the infusion is so, so light touch that, you know, we find that the person that chooses the grapefruit hibiscus skew, I feel like everyone buys the cucumber jalapeno just because they just want a spicy option that's easy, right? So that one's like on everyone's back bar. And then they tend to like either choose the Valencia orange or the grapefruit hibiscus as their like Blanco alternative, right? Like instead of drinking Blanco, they buy one of those two skews. Now the grapefruit hibiscus makes amazing margaritas because again, it's just a citrus. It's very light touch and you're still playing in the citrus space. They use it interchangeably. It makes a great margarita, a Paloma, tequila sunrise. You can make a great Negroni with it. Same with the Valencia orange, right? Like I don't like Negronis at all, actually. I don't like gin. And I think that Campari and sweet vermouth, there's like, it's very medicinal. They tend to be a little too medicinal for me. And like a lot of those two quantities in a traditional Negroni, but I like the idea of a Negroni and like I like the flavors of a Negroni, but just less. So our recipe for a Negroni is you can use the Valencia orange or the grapefruit hibiscus, 2 ounces of that, and then 1/2 ounce Campari, 1/2 ounce, I prefer white sweet vermouth. Try it, Zach. You're going to freaking love it.
Well, I'm familiar.
I love white sweet vermouth. And then I'll do a splash of orange juice in it. And it's so good. And it's a great summer cocktail. And you know, you literally can do anything that you would use a Blanco, to make. You can use the grapefruit hibiscus for. And then you can do fun things like gin cocktails. Like I love to play around with gin cocktails with the grapefruit hibiscus because of that floral note of the hibiscus. You can do, you know, egg white, any sort of egg whitey kind of thing, like lemon juice with it, egg white. And also like teas, like Earl Grey tea. Like that's a great drink actually, is like with the grapefruit hibiscus, Earl Grey tea, lemon juice, some simple syrup and an egg white. Dynamite. So, wow. So good.
Also for me, every time I have a brunch, I always have the Pink Lady, which is rosé champagne and the grapefruit hibiscus and a splash of club soda. It makes this beautiful light pink color. I believe that if it's in a champagne coupe or a wine glass, it gives you permission to drink before noon. That's my own, you know, rule of thumb. And we call it the Pink Lady, and it is just so, so good. And everyone is always like thinking, because the grapefruit has beautiful notes and so does the hibiscus, they think it's, you know, a 5-6 ingredient cocktail, and it isn't. And that's what's great about, because of all of these infusions that we do, that it's such an elevated, and it feels like you're putting in so many ingredients, but really it's a plus 1 or 2 ingredient cocktail.
All right. Well, Nicole, Sarika, Kat, thank you so much for the time again. Thanks. So great to have Kat, you back on, Sarika, and Nicole, you on for the first time. And we look forward to, obviously, the continued growth and evolution of your brand.
So great to be here, Zach. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Zach.
Thanks so much for listening to the Vine Pair Podcast, the flagship podcast of the Vine Pair Podcast Network. If you love listening to this show, or even if you don't, but I really hope that you do, as much as we really do love making it, then please drop us a review or a rating wherever it is that you get your podcast, whether that be iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, anywhere. If you are listening to this on a device right now, through an app, however you got this audio, please drop a review. It really helps everyone else discover the show. And now for some totally awesome credits. So, the Vine Pair Podcast is recorded in our New York City headquarters and in Seattle, Washington, in Zach Jabal's basement. It is recorded by Zach, mastered, and produced by Zach. He loves all the credit. Keep giving it to him. Drop his name in the reviews. He's going to love hearing how much you love him. It is also recorded in New York City by our tastings director, Keith Beavers, who is the managing director of the entire Vine Pair Podcast Network. I'd also love to give a shout out to our editor-in-chief, Joanna Sherino, who joins us on every single podcast as our third and most important host. Thank you as well to the entire Vine Pair staff and everyone who's been involved in making Vine Pair as special as it's become. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.